Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Remember those endless summer days that felt like they just last forever? Sun rays kiss your skin, grass tickles your toes as you bite into the creamy popsicle melting in your hand. Pure, unbothered bliss. Capture more sun-drenched memories with the Orange Vanilla Dream Hydration Multiplier from Liquid IV. This nostalgic vanilla flavor with notes of candied orange can help keep you hydrated while savoring your favorite golden hour moments. No matter how hot your summer gets, just one stick of Liquid IV and 16 ounces of water hydrates you better than water alone. It's 3 times the electrolytes of the leading sports drink, with 8 vitamins and nutrients for refreshing on-the-go hydration. Live your summer dream with Liquid IV. Tear, pour, live more. Go to liquidiv.com and get 20% off your first order with code INDULGE20 at checkout. That's code INDULGE20 at liquidiv.com.
Hey, everybody, I'm Cameron Caskey.
And I'm Tim Miller, and this is FY Pod, where we're discussing the news and the youth and other such matters and the anxieties of Cameron and his friends and Gen Z. But first, is this true? Is this the most notable Gen Z in government right now? Big balls? Is that possible?
You can make the argument that it's like Max Frost, who's a congressman, but I don't think Max Frost has as much power to dismantle the government as Big Balls does. But yeah. I didn't know there was Big Balls news. What happened?
Well, he got beat up on the streets in D.C.
No.
I know. We'll put up the picture. He's bloodied. He got bloodied and battered. The situation, though, is kind of interesting because it seems like it was a mugging. Like, he seems like he got jumped. Not good. Hopefully these young men are held to account. But he's in DuPont Circle, and he's with a girl, it seems like. Don't exactly know what the situation with that is when this happens.
Well, Big Balls, yet another thing on which we cannot relate. Sorry, what?
And then some cops roll up. So he's getting beat up, and some cops roll up, I actually don't remember offhand if they arrested the youth or if they're still looking for them or what the deal is. But like during the course of this mugging, the D.C. police show up. I begin that story, tell that story because it is relevant backdrop to the news we wanted to discuss about how the FBI is moving to dispatch 120 agents to the D.C. streets as they're trying to look for more excuses to militarize our cities. And it's like this situation is, crime is bad. People that do violent crime should be punished. But like the Big Ball situation is not exactly one that just demonstrates that we need like more cops, really. Like the cops were there. Like he was in a highly policed part of D.C. And yet they're just looking for any rationale they can to premise their desire to militarize, the federal our cities.
Well, so federalization talks intensified after 2 15-year-olds were arrested, in fact, last week in connection with the attempted carjacking of former DOGE staffer Edward Korestein, known as Big Balls.
Yeah. So they were arrested. Trump, there you go.
Yeah. Trump called for D.C. to change its law to charge teens 14 years or older as adults, as he blamed the city's crime rates on youths. Which is what, you call people my age, the youths.
The youths.
But it's worth noting also that Interior Secretary Doug Burgum, who in the 2023 Republican primary kind of seemed like a normal guy, he has been ordered to remove all homeless people from the Capitol, which seems like a bigger story here than it might be getting credit for.
Yeah, I mean, it depends on the details, there are certainly some things that could be done with the homeless encampments in D.C., but, like, the federal, like, to me, the story is that, like, okay, so we're in Los Angeles. We were in Los Angeles together last week. Still, like, there are military dispatched to basically run, like, perimeter security around immigration raids, essentially. in Los Angeles. Totally not needed. Now we're going to add more agents to the streets of D.C., going to, I guess, turn the Department of Interior into an enforcement vehicle for cities. Like, that is the part that is kind of alarming, because in a big country like ours, like, shit happens. Like, bad stuff happens. And I feel like they are really looking for any excuse possible to further cement.
It's a fucking military takeover. Trump wants his soldiers in as many dense population areas as possible so he can assert control. I mean, ICE isn't just about ripping, you know, babysitters away from little kids and taking innocent men and sending them to El Salvador to get shaved and beaten. Like, ICE is there to be Trump's secret police force. This isn't a subtle thing. This is something they're basically touting. And now ICE has a bigger budget than the Marines. But another thing worth noting about this whole DC thing, and I think this is really important because it elucidates just how much nonsense Trump is trying to, how much he's trying to stoke the flames of something that isn't a non-issue, but is not the issue that he's painting it as. According to data from the district, crime in DC was down 35% in 2024, the lowest it's been in 30 years. So acting like this is some sort of crisis that needs to be handled by federalization is blatantly ignoring the fact that this is a crisis that is currently being handled without Trump's jackboot soldiers getting involved.
Crime's not everywhere. It's the weird part of it is, like, it's the one, it shows it's the one issue where they are actually committed to power and to a power policy outcome, is with regards to crime, immigration, militarization of cities, because in a lot of other cases, Trump would just be like taking credit right now. Because there's been like a trend downward from crime basically since COVID ended, and it's continued like into this year. So like you could imagine another world where Trump's like, you know, Mr. Trump, Big Dick Trump got in, and now all the criminals are too scared to crime. You know, like they could be going that route, but they are so desperate to send the military into the streets that they have to do the we're pretending like crime is up and there's a crisis thing.
And there was something kind of annoying about the way crime was framed in the New York City mayoral Democratic primary, because they were talking about it like it was one of the biggest issues facing the city. And again, this isn't to wave off violent crime, the victims who have had to deal with violent crime and things like that. It's objectively and statistically not even close to the problem people say it is. Like, oh my God, someone stole deodorant from Dwayne Reed. And suddenly they're treating it as though this is a crime rampage city and ignoring the fact that the highest crime rates are in these red states. The God's country, as Morgan Wallen called it on his way out of SNL, which he did on purpose, so I don't know what the fuck he was complaining about. God's country is where you get the highest homicide rates. God's country is where you get these, you know, so much of the fentanyl crisis that is, of course, ravaging cities like San Francisco and Philly. But also the red states where people are acting like there's some sort of utopia. Have you seen that thing where right-wing people on Twitter will post pictures of like this beautiful idyllic neighborhood and say, this is the America that we're fighting for? And we're like, yeah, the neighborhoods like that are in blue states in the Northeast.
Yeah, I do kind of love trad posting in the memes. One other thing on this we wanted to talk to news-wise that I haven't gotten to previously is on Thursday, Trump asked the Supreme Court to essentially allow ICE to racially profile. There's an injunction currently blocking ICE's mass arrest program. It was issued by a court in California because it bars ICE agents from arresting people because of four factors: appearing Hispanic, speaking Spanish, or accented English. I wonder what accented English, what qualifies as accent. Trump kind of speaks accented English.
I believe that's when Shawn Mendes is singing the Senorita song.
working on a particular
I believe that's
type.
Despacito by Justin Bieber.
Working on a particular type of job, like at a Home Depot, or being present at a place where immigrants are known to gather. So you can't just pull up on people for those four reasons, and that's exactly what they've been doing. Trump's trying to get the Supreme Court to just give that a thumbs up.
You know, it's become a little cliche to say, oh, gee, the thing that we all told you was going to happen is happening. But it is worth noting, and it behooves us all to point out, that this is what everybody said was going to happen. It's not just about going after the criminals, like so many people say, including the MAGA people who are speaking out against this, saying we thought this was just about the criminals. No, it is just people who are brown, appear Hispanic, and are hanging out places where immigrants are known to hang out. Are you fucking kidding me? What does that even mean? And what we were talking about AI in our last episode. One of the other scary things here is the fact that they're going to start using AI to profile people like this. And you see that with the way that Palantir operates. So I'm very concerned about this, but I'm curious what you're hearing, because you've been speaking to so many people who have been abused and preyed upon by ICE.
Yeah, I just worry that that racial profiling is kind of popular. You know, I do think some of the other Trump measures of the Trump immigration agenda are extremely unpopular. And it's also horrific and heinous, which is why it's unpopular, which is why I've been talking about it and talking to some of these folks. I do worry about this, that, like, it doesn't have the same resonance. But it is, I mean, it's happening. Like, the fact that it's happening has been obvious from day one. And the injunction is limited to them. Like, people have been noticing and talking about this in the immigrant defenders community now ever since January.
Yeah, so I'm curious. So you're saying that some of the elements of the Trump immigration crackdowns that are unpopular with people who are otherwise really supportive of his agenda, that the profiling thing might actually be more popular.
I don't know. What do you think? I don't have any actual data on this. I'm just speaking anecdotally. I just worry, because, like, I don't know. I think the mask stuff is unpopular. It feels weird. It feels un-American. Like, going after old ladies who've been here for 50 years feels un-American, feels wrong. People aren't really for that. Like, going after a group of Mexican-looking dudes hanging out at the Home Depot about to do day labor, I do think that a lot of the Trump I think the Trump people are basically for that, I guess is what I'm saying. So I think it's an interesting story, because it's like they have to explicitly say, yes, we are racially profiling, rather than just, like, racially profiling and trying to, like, act like there's some other pretense for it. So I think that's interesting. I don't, maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. What do you think? I'm wrong?
No, I totally get it. I think that pulling brown people off the streets is what a lot of people were, in fact, voting for. I was just curious, I guess, that, you know, where you think people draw the line. And I guess the masked, you know, thugs type of thing is definitely one of those places. But it's going to be interesting to see where the protests move from here. You know, so many people write into FY Pod and ask about why Gen Z isn't showing up on the streets. But one of the things that I'm going to be curious about is how we mobilize against what's going on with this. Because, you know, we always talk about this, but it's always worth talking about. We are all so exhausted and also overwhelmed with things to be furious about that something like racial profiling by ICE, as if they weren't already doing that, by the way, something like the federalized agents throwing homeless people into God knows where, you know, I don't even know if people are really going to catch on to the fact that this is happening, especially since ICE getting the clearance to racially profile. I feel like everyone has already assumed that that's what was happening anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was just kind of limiting because I need this injunction. Like, they've been racially profiling, essentially. But I guess the sense is that, like, ICE has, like, created some level of internal self-limitation that has kept them from, like, going totally ham on this. I don't exactly know where they have assessed that line to be, but I mean, I think that's, like, basically the big concern. They have all these new recruits coming in, Superman, the thugs, the ex-cops, and, you know, now they get totally unshackled from just, like, rolling up.
Do you remember when Dr. Phil was pulling up to ICE raids?
I did. You know, it's a little teaser, but I'm debating Dean Cain on this tomorrow on the Piers Morgan program.
You're debating Dean Cain?
Yeah, the newest ICE agent. Do you think
so? You're going after Superman, like Lex Luthor.
Yeah, I think, isn't he, I would say you're more into the this world than I am, but isn't he just kind of like the evil bizarro Superman, actually? Kind of like that one Superman that went to Russia?
Well, so the thing is, like, Dean Cain was talking about how the new Superman movie was woke because the director, James Gunn, was talking about how it's an immigrant story.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, it's an immigrant story. He's an illegal alien. He's literally an alien. And he came to the United States of America. And by the way, like, assimilated really hard, like started carrying the American flag around. The degree to which Superman was a patriot kind of depended on who was writing him. Some comic books, he was like shaking Ronald Reagan's hand and holding a giant American flag. Other comic books, he was sort of a globalist. But yeah, Dean Cain was complaining about Superman being woke because a masked agent threw him to the ground and sent him to a cell in an undisclosed location in the new Superman movie. But it's like, Dean, you didn't read the comic book, or you're just being manipulative and everything. And Bulwark has covered this extensively, so I don't need to beat it any further into the ground. But also, like, your grandparents were held in a Japanese internment camp. Like, did you know that?
I'm interested that you know it. I just found it out like 2 hours ago when I started to look into Dean Cain before I started to do the debate tomorrow.
Dean Cain said, you know what? My grandparents were Nazi'd by America, and that turned me into Superman. So if I Nazi more people's grandparents, perhaps we'll have a whole generation of Supermen. That's my generous take on Dean Cain's whole approach here. But yeah, I'm excited to watch that. I love watching you debate, love watching you take on old Superman. But yeah, this is all, you know, I'm nervous that these stories kind of blend together a little bit. Trump trying to get a federalized attack on DC, and also ICE doing this profiling stuff right now. But I do think there is this real connective tissue of Donald Trump turning these agencies into his own secret but not so secret police force that really just does his bidding and doesn't hold him accountable in any way.
We got to do some Gen Z topics since this is a Gen Z show.
Can I share a story real quick?
Oh yeah, please.
Everybody leave a comment down below of your favorite woke superhero. I don't know where that came from. Yeah.
Can I just say though, really quick? I was going to interrupt you, but you're cooking. You could be a pro-immigrant globalist who also likes the American flag and Ronald Reagan. All of those things are, Superman is consistent across those boards. Ronald Reagan had plenty of issues for progressives, but he was a globalist and he also liked immigration.
The reason that I think Superman is a great superhero for just liberal, left-wing, progressive values is he's this person who's got all this power, and instead of using it to take things for himself, he uses his power to give things to other people. And people talk about how Superman is a boring hero and he's too powerful and everything. And I say it's all about who's writing him, because ultimately, and this is what the new Superman movie got so right, Superman is a story about somebody who could do whatever the fuck he wants. And he makes the choice, in spite of the cynicism in this world, to do what's right, not because it's what's easy, but it's because that's how he was raised by his poor farmer parents in Kansas. And those are his values. And those are the values our country ought to display. But I'm going to tell a quick story before I talk too much about Superman. I was at a movie premiere last night for Mooch, guest of Anthony Scaramucci Jr., guest of FY Pod. We'll throw a picture of me and the boys up on the red carpet right now. We were at the LA premiere of his short film Money Talks, and I was chatting with my friends, LC, Snacks the Hip Hopper, also a guest, Big Chris Carden, who's a guest on the FY Pod channel. Go subscribe. And a couple of other members of my gang. And I was loudly talking about how I don't do drugs anymore. I never want to do drugs again. But I would love to know what crack feels like. Mm. And I was being kind of loud because it was a loud room. I was like, yeah, you know, I mean, the people who love crack, they love crack. So it must be really good. Like watching Hunter Biden talk about it when he was sitting down with Andrew Callahan from Channel 5 News. Like, I feel like, again, I don't even want to touch weed again. I don't want to drink alcohol, nicotine, none of that. But I just wish I knew what crack was like.
Maybe free-based cocaine instead.
Yeah, there was this adult woman with her husband and small child, and they were kind of standing right next to us. And I had sort of clocked that they were there, and I was like, okay, I'm going to talk about crack a little bit more quietly.
And there was a Biden family member.
Yeah, she starts to walk up to me, and I'm like, oh no, is she going to tell me to stop talking about crack in front of her kid? And she was like, hey, you do the show with Tim Miller, right? And I was like, yeah. And she said, I love the show. I think it's so funny. You guys are so great. You have such a great dynamic. And we just had a nice little chat. And she was like, okay, I'll let you guys have your fun. And I was like, oh, okay. So FY Pod listener out in the wild, hearing me loudly talk about just an interest in crack in front of her child. But I feel like if she listens to the show, she could also come to expect that from me.
I feel like that's on brand. Thank you to that listener.
Yeah, but anyway, you sent me something really interesting.
Yeah, I don't know if this, if that story, that aside, reflects the stats I'm about to show you, because it seems like you're still on the uptick when it comes to extroversion. But the guy, these guys at the FT, John Byrne Murdoch does a great job at the FD doing kind of data analysis and stuff. He looks at a lot at young people in particular. This chart came up, and I saw it a couple times on my social media feed, including from one person saying Gen Z is so cooked. We are so cooked. So here's where we are. It's basically young adults' personalities, the changes between 2016, 2014, really, and today. And what you see here is conscientiousness down. I don't really know what these numbers mean, what it means from being down from 50 to 30, but it's a lot. Chart go down on conscientiousness. Chart go up on neuroticism. Quite a bit, significantly. Agreeableness, chart go down. Extroversion, chart go down. So we're getting more anxiety, less agreeableness, less extroversion, less conscientiousness, which I didn't really know what that was. So reading more, that means being dependable, disciplined, committed. That's what conscientiousness is. So I don't know. That doesn't seem great.
Yeah, I don't know how they measure these things. I don't know. You know, I'm sure we could figure out what the how they gathered these statistics. But just as somebody from within my generation, I can say that that all sounds about right.
Just to give one example on how they do it. So they ask like specific questions underneath each of those categories. So like full, and then it's self-identified, right? So some of this is like, this is self-reported. So there are limits to that. But like they'll ask, are you likely to make plans and follow through consistently? Do you persevere until something's finished? Are you easily distracted? Can you be careless? Things like that. And then, you know, they combine it into traits.
Gotcha. Yeah. Well, again, speaking as somebody from within this generation, this all totally checks out. There's just been so many shifts where I'm blessed to have not only you, but just a gaggle of great millennial friends who I get to talk to and sort of ask, like, were you guys dealing with this when you were around my age? About a bunch of characteristics that I've just noticed in people of my generation. I think people have certainly become less dependable and reliable. I think a lot of that does tie back to anxiety and existential anxiety. I think that people get anxious when there's a plan that they have coming up and they're quicker to not want to follow through. I think ghosting is something that is very much the result of the texting and messaging era in a way that maybe people weren't ghosting each other before. But I think that there's just this large antisocial movement that social media has been playing a big part in.
That's funny. I was told by Mark Zuckerberg that social media is bringing the world together.
Well, send him my warmest regards next time you guys chat. But I identified as neurotic just because I thought that neurotic meant like hyperfixating on details that make you anxious. What Google told me is it's a personality trait characterized by the tendency to experience negative emotions like anxiety, worry, and depression. Like, I'm an extremely anxious person. I get debilitating panic attacks all the time. But I also love talking to people, being a reliable, dependable person. So, I don't think that these things all cancel each other out. I think there's a way to strike balance between these different traits. But people are just not socializing anymore. I think that's a big part of it. There's so much antisocial behavior, and I think it's chipping away at our character. I think that it's actually making us less empathetic. And ultimately, that ends up making us treat ourselves more poorly, because I think that we have just lowered the bar for how we feel human beings deserve to be treated.
We're social creatures. All of us are built a little different. Shout out to the introverts out there. That's a real thing. There are people that get more energy from kind of having more alone time and having opportunity to kind of rest and recharge. But even introverts, like, being an introvert does not mean being lonely and isolated, right? And like nobody is like handles being alone and isolated well. And so I just like this extroversion thing is kind of interesting to me, because it's just like, I think it's also, you know, kind of a stand in for isolation. Whatever you think about like the specific questions in this kind of test, like it's hard just to not note this like observation, which is like throughout, since they began measuring this, the youngest people were the ones that said they were the most extroverted, most whatever, social. Since the pandemic, it's flipped. Now they're the least. Basically, since 2020. So, like, whatever you think about, like, how much the chart's going down, like, that is, like, a notable finding, right? That it's, like, it used to be young people that were saying that they were more extroverted, wanting to go talk to, see other people, talk to other people. And that kind of makes sense. Like, young people are in school, a lot of times college, like, you're in a more social environment. As, you know, I see this as men start to get old, they get a little bit more weird and isolated, don't like, get a little set in their ways, certain types of men. And so it makes sense. But, like, so for that to flip, it's, like, not nothing. Like, that's, to me, that's bad.
And I don't think that everything is the boogeyman of social media, but I think most things are. And social media has really trained, these algorithms have trained us to devalue ourselves. And I think, as I had kind of said before, like devaluing yourself and devaluing others go hand in hand. And I think the more we divest from our own, from the degree to which we all deserve perseverance and individuality and agency, the further we get away from treating ourselves with that, I think, how could we treat others? You know, it's like when you're talking about relationships and you say, you know, you can't really love somebody else if you don't love yourself. And that's not to say you don't, you can't have problems with yourself. That's not to say you have to be a narcissist, but you have to be able to treat yourself with love if you are going to give it to others. And that's just something that we aren't doing. And that's, you know, whether that's male algorithms training us to see content that turns us against women, whether that's women seeing content that makes them feel like their bodies are ugly and disgusting, they need to get on Ozempic and they need to Facetune themselves. It's all part of this larger thing where, in order to retain our attention, which is the most important currency for social media, they want us to feel like we have to go to their app for affirmation, like the drug. I mean, this is why you see all these studies about how social media apps literally interact with the dopamine in our brains. It is a drug now to go to these social media platforms and either see the versions of yourselves that you want to be, or see people liking and commenting and affirming to you that you are in fact living up to that. Yeah. So once our identities become commodified, suddenly we lose our personal connection to them. And when we lose that, we lose our connections to each other. And that's why it's so great that you and I have each other, because
it is great that we have each other.
We have a great time together. We were in LA recently. We had a blast. We were with our producer, Dante, who's the best.
And we are in person.
But it's scary.
It is scary. But here's the thing. I don't know. My advice for young folks on this is, like, there's something about the phone that also, like, not even social media, like everything you said about social media, I agree with. I do think you stole a line from RuPaul in there somewhere.
Really?
It was, how does it go? If you can't love yourself, how the hell are you going to love anybody else? Can I get an amen?
I don't think RuPaul invented that, but
I'm pretty sure RuPaul invented it.
I met RuPaul once. We'll throw up a picture right now of me and RuPaul. Anyway.
Jealous. Anywho, like the phone, the communication on the phone is in some ways not natural to the human condition. And like, how many times have you like thought you're in a fight with somebody over text, and then like you see them in person and you're like, oh, like I was just misreading that, or like the context was a little off, or like, I don't know, maybe they're just grumpy in the fucking moment they sent it to me. You know what I mean? Like, that happens all the time. And I worry that, like, the more your communication gets filtered through it, like, I can understand why your extroversion would go down, because you get fucking paranoid.
I thought you were mad at me the other day because I sent something like totally normal that was just either us scheduling something or like me giving you an idea. And you responded in all lowercase, sure. And all lowercase sure does have a tinge of I'm mad at you. I don't think that's what you were communicating. I think you were just like, sure.
Okay.
But there's definitely so many ways for us to misread each other on text. And I'm very much an are you mad at me person to everybody in my life, including in person during regular social interactions. This is just anyone who wants to know some behind the scenes FY pod. I'll make a jab at Tim on the show and he'll like jab me back. And then I'll text him after the episode like, hey, man, I'm so sorry about that. And Tim will be like, oh, my God, we were fucking around.
Right.
But there's also a way that the phone can fucking make you more social. Like, so many of the most important relationships in my life are friends that I've had for a really long time. And the way that I stay in touch with them, if they're still in Parkland, if they're, you know, where I am right now in Los Angeles and I'm in New York, like, texting somebody once a week, hey, thinking about you, how are you doing? Swiping up on each other's Instagram stories to say just even LOL or great picture and stuff like that. It's a way that you can remain more connected that is just, it's gardening the seeds of a relationship and allowing it to grow over time. So it's not like the phone and social media inherently isolate us from each other. It's about the way that you use it.
You gotta have the seeds there, you know? You got to go out there in person.
You got to garden. You got to tend to your relationships. And there are so many people that I know who don't text people, hey, just wanted to say hi. Hey, just thought about you. And they say, well, I don't want to bother somebody. And it's like, I really, truly believe most people love to get a text from a friend that's like, hey, just thought of you, sending you my best. And those are the things that tend to relationships and keep them going for years.
Well, this is FLI Pod, where conscientiousness is a little bit down, actually. We didn't have a guest this weekend because we had some scheduling issues. Sorry about that. Neuroticism, also up. Agreeableness. Agreeableness is up. We were pretty agreeable this episode. Extroversion, up. So things are doing good here at FLI Pod. All right,
yeah, everybody? And everybody, I just wanted to plug something real quick. I'm going to be going on AEW wrestler Saraya's podcast, Rule Breakers, tomorrow, where I'm going to be hooked up to a machine that simulates period cramps. So if anybody wants to watch that.
I was interested until I heard the details. Good luck with that.
With FY Pod, we're Tim Miller and Cam Caskey. Stay tuned. We got a lot of great stuff coming up.
Bye.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.